It's 88.5 FM with Sky Daniels, and we're happy to be joined by Paul Banks and Daniel Kessler of Interpol as we're here in the annex of the Beggars Group recording studios.
Howdy.
How's it going?
A lot. You've been working pretty incessantly for the last 18 months, I guess, both on the road, and you were in a transitional place when you began to make Marauder. You were starting to get the ideas of the future in the form of what would be the record as you prepared to go out on the 15th anniversary tour of Turn On the Bright Lights. That had to take a little bit of a mindset of gearing up for what's next and then bringing what was back to the fore.
I mean, the way it worked out pretty simply, actually, because we don't all live in New York City. So when we're writing at least the last couple records, we'll get together for a few weeks and then we'll break for like a month. Sam will go back to Georgia and Daniel and I will go about our things and we'll live with the recordings we have of a rehearsal, come back a month later, work some more, you know, and on and off like that for a long time. So we were deep into new material when we first started doing any prep work for Bright Lights. And also, like, Bright Lights lives in a lot of our live shows. You know, a chunk of songs from that record we play pretty consistently. So it was really a matter of, like, brushing up whatever five or six songs had been sort of off the rotation for a long time that we were really unfamiliar with. And it was not, like, an interruption to the writing of the new record. It was just sort of, like, another one of the many breaks that were part of the writing process. And I think it really sort of didn't impact me in the way that I was looking at any of the music that we were writing to go back and look at those songs. What I think it did for me was kind of reinvigorate that part of my brain that is in tune with the live performance. So it was, we'd been a while off the road. So right before going into the studio to record new music, I think it was actually like a great exercise in aid of the new record to go live with an old record.
And so you did, you could recall, because those, for the most part, those songs had become muscle memory to some degree, and it would inform you of the energy, how it works on stage, and it would help you keep that in mind with whatever you were preparing for Marauder.
And for me personally, like whatever studio trickery you might employ in a studio setting or that you can employ, when you're live, it's just the musicians on the stage doing what they're doing. And so I think it was like a good kind of reinforcement before going to the studio, like, hey man, like we just, you know, we're dudes with instruments. Let's just like record that. And so I think Bright Lights actually was a benefit to the recording of this record.
You've talked in the past about how the approach you do make when you make records, you don't have a confab of sorts in which you get together and plot what the next record should be. It sort of comes somewhat to the fact that you don't all live together and you do work independently as you begin to get an inkling of what the songs are going to become, and then everybody brings in their own contributions and then they start to evolve. How does that process work, and how long typically might it take for you to realize, all right, we're getting around to what could be called an album?
I mean, typically, really, it doesn't take, I mean, just by, as Paul mentioned, we usually, when we are, like, committed to writing a new record, we usually get together something, like, on average for, like, a week to 10 days for every 4 weeks or something like that. Unfortunately, we've done this now for the last few records, when by the end of each writing period, I think we have a little more to show than when we, you know, started it, which there's no guarantees, I think, when you're writing music. It's not like building a house where you're following a blueprint, you know exactly what's going to happen. You may, yeah, maybe there'll be a storm, might be a little bit of this and that, but you'll get there.
The contractors never complete it on time.
But at least you have there's usually an excuse for why they didn't, versus like, well, I don't know, you got to make sure, you know, for us to do what we're doing, things have to be happening. There has to be ideas, there have to be, you know, creativity, we have to feel inspired from one another. Fortunately, so after each session, normally we do have a little more show from it, as Paul mentioned, then we have something to take away and live with as far as where we're at currently with that batch of songs and where, you know, what we might want to try the next time we get together. So we have like firm ideas. We're like, oh yeah, that was cool how we did this. What about that? Oh, I really like that. Let's maybe keep with this and so forth. And Typically when we start like the actual overall process, I'll have like a batch of, you know, songs I've been working on or progressions or what have you. And so at the beginning of this session, you know, Paul and I got together and he had a bass setup and a mic setup, and it was pretty, we had a pretty fruitful first initial days, just of, you know, the two of us. And we kind of, and I think after those few days where we, you know, Paul had the vocal melody right away and the bass line, I would say, for what would become The Rover and If You Really Love Nothing. And I think when things are kind of rolling that quickly right out of the gate, and then that's even before Sam's had a chance to really, you know, jump on and approach it the way he sees fit for the songs. And I think when we have that going, I feel like it's already like things feel very exciting and encouraging. And I, for me, whenever, you know, it's something that's been consistent since the early days of Interpol, is when you have rehearsals where something happened with a song, it took a turn where you didn't see it coming, or you finally see the form, you know, the formation of the body of the song, you see where it's going, and you're like, oh man, you kind of leave that rehearsal space and it's just like you're a little bit walking on air. And that's something I remember from the early days, and it certainly happened quite often during this writing session as well. So I feel really fortunate that those things are still exist, and those, you can't have them every single day, that's just like, right, you can't have those breakthroughs, but the fact that they're still there, and it's, it brings you back to almost being like a teenager still, where you're like, oh man, it's the same reason why you started writing music in the first place. It becomes sort of like a drug that you want more. You can't get it every day, but when you do, it just makes you a little bit like you want to try to do better than what you just did.
It, you know, you mentioned something that at this stage of your career, you know, you've obviously, that's the proverbial...
Wrong answer, I'm sorry.
But the proverbial knock on the door of a new phase of your career. You've got a hard-earned, you know, experience, but you do want to maintain that youthful drive, that sense of discovery. And you've mentioned in some interviews that it felt that way when you were getting into this record, where you could call on what you had learned and what you had felt in those moments of discovery where this was becoming a song. But you could always, as you were talking about, okay, how's this going to play on stage? You've got that mindful, it's forward in all directions in that front. So how do you, does that just come naturally? Have you been able to retain that youthful drive?
I think it's not an effort. I don't think it's like an effort thing. I think fortunately... I think, you know, it's something that's like, that's been consistent. You know, I've always felt that way, and I am grateful because I do think there are bands that when you know, this is our sixth record, and there are bands after a while, they don't necessarily maybe, and I don't know, you know, I'm only projecting or imagining that, like, maybe they're like, oh, we got to go make another record. That's just what we do. And I don't feel that way. I feel like when we're doing this, it's just more of like that desire to better your, you know, like what you've done previously, to go forward and so forth. And so in that moment, like I was mentioning, when you have these like exciting moments, at that moment, it feels like something unprecedented. It feels like, oh man, I love this. Oh, I really love it. And it's like a feeling of like love for me a little bit. It's like, you're so excited about what's happening in that. And that fortunately is not something that's feels like so, you know, reaching deep to like tap into that energy. I think it just shows that there's a lot that this band has, you know, when we're working together, there's a lot that we have yet to tap into, and I think we can keep going deeper and deeper with that, you know.
How many times do you feel like you've had a lightning bolt when you're writing a song, to where, you know, you get that first phase of it feeling right, and it becomes so quickly, it has an energy of its own. Have you been blessed to have that lightning in a bottle where you had a song way quicker and it extended way past any of your preconceptions? Has that ever happened, or is there still some analysis that goes into every song?
I mean, it's an interesting, I think when you're in a collective like this, and Daniel's bringing the chord progressions, and I'm bringing the vocal. So I might have a lightning bolt about a vocal that best suits the chord progression that he's introducing. I think that sometimes you'll hear about, like, you know, John Lennon at a piano, and like all of a sudden the song that we know came to him. But we're a kind of collaboration where it's like, you know, the lightning bolts are sort of shooting between each of us rather
synapses.
Than one of us sort of arriving and saying, like, I've got it. You know, this is the epiphany. So, and I think in a way that's what keeps us going long term, is that it's like these pieces that, you know, we need each other for this music that, you know, is Interpol to happen. So it's a funny thing. I know the feeling that you're talking about like an epiphany. I can say that on this record, yeah, I'll have it from time to time on a guitar riff or on a lyric that'll just sort of pop in and say, like, that's it. I'm going to hang the whole meaning of the song around that phrase that just popped into my head.
And that is, to your point, you are electrified. You know, you by Jove, I've got it, you know, and it's got to fuel those songs to places you possibly didn't think they were going to go because, you know, you're rising with what you're discovering.
I mean, even for me, though, when Paul sang, approach If You Really Love Nothing, both from the bass and vocal standpoints, I didn't see it necessarily coming from either one of those, you know, perspectives. But he had the falsetto for If You Really Love Nothing and that vocal melody, that line, like literally from like day one, from the moment that I started playing that progression, and also the way he approached playing the bass gave a bit more of an upbeat sort of approach to the song overall. When I was playing it, I think I had a bit more, maybe like my chords were a little bit more macabre, a little bit more melancholy. And all of a sudden the song took on like, oh no, it actually doesn't, you know, it's got something maybe a bit more sentimental as far as in the root of it, but it's not like a macabre song now. All of a sudden it's got this something kind of like uplifting. And then I would never have guessed in a million years like he was going to approach that with like that vocal melody or, you know, either. But then to me, those are things that that's like what makes this band still like a really exciting band that I recognize from the early days, where it's just like different approaches of a song and people looking in different ways, but the result is better because of that, you know?
It's interesting to listen and to realize that there is a willingness to... Obviously, there has to be a willingness to, particularly when it is a collaboration, you know, to the degree that it is in these songs, to see where the song would go. But again, when you are on your sixth record, you know, are you mindful of steps that might be being retraced, or do you not even allow yourself to be that analytical? Do you just let a song that's feeling right find its own conclusion?
I think that within any given conversation, any given rehearsal, you might encounter both sides of that question. You might have someone wanting to sort of like, I could do this, but I've done that, and I really want to do something else. And then we sometimes, there'll be a conversation about like, let's not overthink what's happening here. You know, this is, the song wants to just do this. Like, don't. Because you can, if you've written something on feel, and then conceptually you want to do something more original, sometimes that's a good enterprise, and sometimes you're now just making something overwrought that was working fine before. So that's part of the balance, I think, and any given member might not always come away sort of feeling like, cool, it's going the way that I think it should go. But I think ultimately those are the sort of, you know, dynamics and tensions that make a good band is sort of, but it's a good question. I think every artist is, you're never trying to retread, you know, but I feel like, yeah, like I said, you can't try too hard to be original just for original sake.
Right. Either. Because what happens, Paul Simon once wrote, you know, with all he was talking about how wanting, you know, and he's obviously worked in many idioms and tried out a few new tricks himself. He said, one thing you try not to do, though, is avoid making a great song just for, you know, and he used a reference to some of the free jazz periods, you know, where they went atonal and everything. He goes, you can take it to a point in avoiding any tradition to where you don't have a song anymore. Mm. And you know, that's one of the challenges of, you know, where do you go to keep things new, fresh, and
I think that's what makes good chemistry in a band like ours, is that like you can have one guy who can make it their prerogative, like, no, I'm gonna take it over into this crazy place, and then you have the guy with the Paul Simon sensibility, and what you get there is you get stuff that's different, and there's some tension to it. But that's a good quote. I like that.
Well, let's take something to the mundane now. The recording sessions, as I understand it, started out with a boom or a bang, or perhaps a knock on the door, because you were working in New York in the early phases, and you perhaps put too much faith in your New York City neighbors in the workspace you were using at that time. Is this the case?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was the case. We were the yeahs were kind enough to let us use their space on the Bowery there, and so it was. I really found it to be the best rehearsal space we ever had. It was somewhere. It's hard to find spaces, as you would imagine. It's always been hard in New York City, but even more so in this, you know, like kind of very affluent age of New York. But
the places you could go where there was a real warehouse is now a $5 million condo.
And this place was also great for many reasons. One, it was subterranean, and so when you went down there, it sounded great, and they made it really homey, like a nice little clubhouse. But when you were down there, you could really leave New York behind. And I don't think I've ever been in a rehearsal space where you could leave New York behind when you're there. You know, usually, because it's like, if you're in a rehearsal space, for the most part, we've always been in a rehearsal space that if you're not playing music, you're going to hear the bands next door to you playing music, so you better play music. This is a space where if you didn't play music, maybe you could hear cars, but you probably couldn't because it was like very insulated and so forth. Anyway, it was great, and I think we're making great progress with the songs that would end up. This is just a rehearsal space, not a recording facility. And we're making good headway of the new songs that would end up on Marauder. And then, we were rehearsing one day during like a heavy blizzard, so maybe the person upstairs was home, and then all of a sudden we got a knock from the cops asking us to, quit or whatever, and so we stopped for that day. And then a couple months later, we got like another complaint that was delivered through the landlord, and then we thought we tried to work it out with the complaining neighbor, and then but the very next time we started playing, the cops showed up, and they were like, today's your last day, basically. Like, you're out of here. And so it was sort of
NYPD.
We knew sooner or later that we might get that knock, and all good things must come to an end. But it was really unfortunate.
So you mentioned snow, and in an effort to get out into a perhaps more wide open space, you did what any self-respecting New Yorker in the Bowery would do. You decided to head almost up to Buffalo to join your producer in probably 20 feet of snow at the time, to some degree.
We're out of snow. Yeah, we did, man. I don't know. That's Fridman's MO is, if you're going to work with him, you work with him in his studio, and it's way up there in the frozen tundra.
And, literally, it can get hit pretty good.
It's actually really, it's also like really, it's not even because it's about, I think, an hour from Buffalo. And it's an area well known for like the lake effect. It's just endless amounts of snow. And, 4 years ago, literally like 4 years ago, almost a little less than 4 years ago, we were trapped for 3 days like on a highway, literally in that same area. So it's kind of like, and that was in November, and here we are going back in from December through April for the most part. We did several trips.
You tempted fate.
And I was like, really? Okay. I mean, Dave Fridman is, the best and incredible and so forth. But I was like, we're really going to go back to, it feels like there's something, this is like the bad foreshadowing of a film where, like a horror film where we're all not going to make it. We're going to go back into the eye, to the center spot of where this happened. And like,
you're
going
to go to the
season,
Forum with all the
spend the entire winter there. It just felt like, man, what are we doing?
Now did that, because with that, there is the term cabin fever. Did that somewhat, forced solitude that comes with, a good 20 inches of snow, that probably really had helped create, like, it's on now, because there's literally not much you can do if you can't get out the front door. I mean, if it's 7 feet of snow outside, you got to stay in there and make the most of it. Did that really help you just dig in and totally, find these songs in the studio?
I mean, once we're in the studio, we know where the songs are. I mean, Fridman then was sort of getting under the hood on the songs with us, but we know what we're there to do at that point. I think that the being closed in together just made the whole process more cohesive, and I think it made the end result, I don't know, we're all there for every decision that's made.
So there's nobody walking away kind of saying like, oh, I wonder why they chose that or why they did that with that song. You know, we're all there. And I think that that just kind of gives you a chemistry and allows the record to sort of, I don't know, like not get overworked in a way as well. And there's no redundant contributions happening and everybody just sort of working to a common goal. But, you know, Friedman, he has an MO. It's like that's 2 weeks at a time because at past that, everyone loses their and gets cabin fever. So that's built into the process if is that you're not there.
Mother Nature cooperates at the 14-day mark.
And you can leave, yeah. I was going to say one thing that was funny is when you mentioned Buffalo being an hour away, I was going to say, like, yeah, because I went to Buffalo on a weekend when we had a day off to get a good meal.
I just want to. In respect for all our friends in Buffalo, there's no inferences.
Being I went to Buffalo there to get a good meal.
I think that the experience
wings.
I think that experience would have been much more difficult if we weren't. I think we were pretty pleased with how things are progressing up there, and we certainly got along like right away with Dave, and really loved having him in the mix. I think that obviously made. I think the fact that we were really excited by what we were doing in the studio made time go by at a much faster pace or a better, you know, just like a regular pace. But if we're hitting some like serious like walls and just, you know, then I think it would have been time. I think it would have been really busy.
No snowball fights as a result?
No, I think like Paul's mentioned, I think we arrived with pretty, you know, the song's in good shape and we've been sharing rehearsal recordings with Dave along the way. So he was already familiar with what we're doing and, you know, he was offering a few comments here and there. But for the most part, I think he liked our direction and I don't think he was, you know, we're going to be like, okay, we need to like write a new bridge for this. It'd be more a few things. There'd be certain songs we might want to look at. But we came to the studio really with these songs in hand, and we just kind of followed those through within the way that Dave kind of wanted us to record the songs however he heard
the
them
miking
being,
and everything.
Yeah, and everything like that. And also the way we did everything to like tape pretty much. And so we haven't like almost like the whole record. That was his idea. But it created a looseness and like trust with Dave for one, and also the fact that the reason why we were able to make a record on tape and do it like this is that like it's we've played these songs, you know, so much, we're well rehearsed. He kind of for the most part was in favor with the structure of what we arranged for the songs. So ultimately, it's like. Yeah, so now that you're about to do it to tape, maybe there'll be only space for like one or two guitar takes. But this is where you have to be like, okay, but we've played this song like hundreds of times, so like it's gonna sound good or it's not. You know how you're tight enough, and it felt like let's not overcomplicate this. If it feels good, it sounds good. If that's it, that's it. And
don't overcook.
I kind of like that versus in this day and age where you can. I mean, you can do, you know, the world is yours, so you can make perfect everything. And it was just cool to keep this really alive. I'd be like, yeah, that was cool. So there's like little happy accents on this record, but they're vibey and rad, you know, and they're in the moment. They're human.
Yeah, the right click can really take the soul out of a lot of recordings nowadays. You can fix everything with a right click.
Well, yeah. And you can also just do 100 passes of the same guitar part and just splice it all together into a perfect performance and then layer 15 other takes on top of that, and so you get, you know, just impossible sounds, which is rad, but I like the fact that we went the other way with this record.
Because you've talked about wanting and knowing that, and that makes it for an interesting segue, the fact that in the last, well, when you go out on a tour that at its heart, you know, is commemorating a landmark album, you were out a lot. You've been out. You are out, you know, on the road now. And one of the things that I've been noticing is you've played a number of open air, be it European festivals, Hyde Park. When you were here last, you were at the Los Angeles State Park. Now, tonight, you're going to be at the Hollywood Bowl. That's far away from some of the Luna Lounge, Bowery type clubs, where the tautness of Interpol, I imagine, was forged in fire. What is that atmosphere like when you are in front of a big crowd and the sky's up above you? Does it open up your sense of playing, or does it sometimes feel like, wow, we got to fill all this space?
I kind of love it. I love playing outdoors. I don't know, something about it. I definitely, you know, brighten up a little bit. Something, it's just, it speaks to me. And I like playing either, you know. I don't really have a favorite as far as smaller, more intimate spaces but it's like, you know, the occasions where you're out there, like when we played, you know, in Hyde Park this summer, it's like you gotta be really present. These are really unique moments in your life. And so when you get to play the Hollywood Bowl, it's just, yeah, you can't be like, oh, it's a Hollywood Bowl. You can't say that's like an, you know, it's not. It's like it's like an unbelievable occasion for yourself, and it's something that you really want to celebrate, and you want to be really present every single millisecond that you're out there, and have a great evening for, you know, for yourself and for the audience, and just try to make something special out of it. And it's usually something I really, really enjoy while it's happening. You know, you're a little bit nervous, but in a really good way. You're just excited.
Wait, that Hyde Park show zapped me, man.
In what sense? Like too big, or?
I don't know, not too. I also love like the sea of people vibe, and I love the small intimate club show. They just have different charms. But yeah, that Hyde Park, I don't know, man. It was like something in my brain chemistry was a little funny, and it felt like that guy that walked the tightrope between the Twin Towers, and then he had to go to like his niece's, like, you know,
afterwards.
You know, yeah, like. Chess club annual fundraiser or something.
The bar was raised
right after.
I couldn't be in my own skin after that show. It was just like so huge in broad daylight. It was just a weird come down, basically. It was a fun show and like a super weird come down.
For me, that show though, because it was in my, I lived in England till six, and I'd go to Hyde Park a lot when I was a little kid. Like some of my earliest, wow, I would say memories of life are me and my brothers playing like football, like soccer there in that park. And so one of my brothers, my eldest brother, still lives in London, and then my middle brother lives in Paris, but he traveled over with his daughters for the show. And so I couldn't help but think about, wow, the fact is, ooh, you know, this is again an incredible moment for me, just my own personal like history, that I, you know, my earliest life memories are basically in this park, like family stuff, and both my brothers are here today. And so I was like, I gotta really let that sink in and really, again, celebrate it. So, but it's true. It was like England was experiencing like sunny days for days. It was incredible. And it was like,
it was hot, right?
It was also hot. They just won the World Cup, like their match, the quarterfinal match, I think. Like it was like Gay Pride Day as well. It happened to be in London, you know, Saturday in London. It was sunny, and it was just like, and it was 65,000 people, and it was just like all long. So meaning that just, it wasn't staggered like in a stadium. It was just long, and it felt like it was just a sea of people. It just kept going as far as you could see.
And you used to just, with your brothers, occupy like a 20, you know, yard area of space, kicking the ball around, and now you're up on this massive stage. It had to have a whole lot of, how did I get here?
I was really, yeah, like, you know, made me smile and stuff.
Well, it sounds there's an energy in your remembering the making of the record, you know, the inception of the record, the I guess in a certain sense a long standing respect, you know, for Turn on the Bright Lights and what that tour meant both to you and to the audience, and then how this album came together. Are you having the same feeling of real excitement, enthusiasm on the tour? Because, it, you know, touring's a physical thing as well as an emotional thing. Is everything going well? Is everybody feeling good?
So far, so good. I'm a little tired today.
But you're a trooper.
I'm a trooper.
You're a trooper. You have one cup of coffee, and you are delivering.
I think somebody gave me decaf in that one.
That's no good. Worst. That's, I don't understand the point of decaf. Like, what is it? Just maneuver. Drink something else.
That's no good.
I mean, that's just, I digress, but like, yeah.
But no, the shows have been a blast. This record, I think, because of how we approached it in the studio, is particularly fun. Like, whenever, and we've got like six records now, so it's sort of, we rehearse for a tour, and you're playing old songs, and then you're trying out the new songs for the first time in context with old songs. And every song that we've sort of unveiled from this new record in rehearsal and live just has a very special energy. Just like they really, really pop in the room, and they just feel very complete and like they are like as intended right out of the, you know, the box. And it's fun. It's a fun record to play live. And the fact that the audience has been really reacting to the new material has been super satisfying as well. It's been good.
Well, Marauder is the album we refer to, and it is available in whatever configuration you access music. I, being the Luddite that I am, would prefer all of our listeners go and buy a physical copy, be it vinyl, which we have beautiful vinyl in front of us, be it a CD. But however you access music, as long as you're putting some shekels in the Interpol guitar case, we encourage you to get Marauder. And we encourage you, there's a few seats remaining. Looking at you guys with the smiles on your face when you even think about gracing the stage of the Hollywood Bowl tells me that you're going to give them a performance they don't want to miss tonight. So we thank you for taking some time on what should be a day of rest and fun here in Los Angeles. Hopefully you had a little fun in this interview. Little?
Yeah,
man. Yeah, it's been a very good interview.
Little bit of fun? Okay. I just didn't want to bum you guys out on
your I'm invigorated now.
All right. Well, we'll get some real caffeine in you. And then thanks again, because A, thank you for continuing to make great. And there were so many questions I could ask about your guys' intellectual pursuits and you working on with a vocal coach, and you continue, all of you continuing to find songs independently and music independently of each other. But the spirit of Interpol being together became such a driving theme. I didn't want to take it off that track, because you guys are locked in. So let's keep you locked in going through tonight at the Hollywood Bowl. Thanks again for stopping by.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much.
It's 88.5 FM, Sky Daniels with Interpol.